It's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Noah Adams.
And I'm Robert Siegel. There are 12 subway systems in the United States, all of them potential terrorist targets. Back in 1995, a Japanese cult attacked the Tokyo subway system with sarin nerve gas. 12 people died and hundreds got sick. Since then, federal scientists have been quietly developing ways to protect America's subways. Daniel Zwerdling reports for NPR News and American Radio Works.
When government scientists first sat down together and said, okay, what's the best way to protect America's subways from terrorists? They realized they were facing a huge challenge.
Well, I think, you know, that perhaps the subway is a microcosm of the larger problem of protecting American people while still letting them go about their daily business.
Paige Stoutland helped organize the subway program for the U.S. Energy Department. He says, remember, the whole point of a subway is to whisk people from one place to another as fast and freely as possible. Commuters would never line up to be searched the way they're doing at airports.
It would be unacceptable to have people have to wait an hour to get into a subway station each morning. They would just stop taking mass transit. The American society in particular is a very open society, and we have to recognize that in terms of putting forward technological solutions and other solutions to the chembio threat, other threats as well.
So over the past few years, government scientists have been scrutinizing the subterranean world of subways to help them invent discrete technologies to protect riders. They won't tell all the details because some of their work is secret, but key officials have agreed to share part of it because they say it's not enough information to help terrorists, and it might help commuters feel reassured. Tony Policastro oversees the subway project. He's based at Sandia National Laboratory near Chicago. We descend into a system that he wants to keep anonymous. Policastro says the U.S. Army confirmed that subways are vulnerable years ago. Back in 1966, the Army conducted a mock attack on the subways in New York City. It was right after morning rush hour.
Scientists from Fort Detrick, Maryland, went to the New York City system and released a biosimulant, basically a harmless bacteria that is similar to the way toxic bioagents operate. They had operatives actually releasing the simulant onto the tracks, and they had scientists actually measuring concentrations and exposures at stations inbound and outbound.
And they found that the bacteria quickly spread through the subway system. Scientists originally figured that the bacteria spread so fast mainly because there are all sorts of complicated air currents swirling down in the tunnels. That was kind of discouraging because it'd be hard to control those air currents after an attack. But the government's latest studies show that chemicals and bacteria mainly spread in a much simpler way. They ride the trains like silent passengers. Incidentally, Policastro says he and his colleagues proved this with computer models, and then they ventured into subways in the middle of the night, and they released a cloud of chemicals and tracked it.
The ventilation system of a train car can have it sucked into the train and actually moved with the train at the speed of the train. So if the train moves at 30 miles an hour, the agent, chemical agent, or biological agent would go into that train car and move with the train. So we can travel numerous stations in rather short periods of time, and when the doors open, some of it gets emitted onto the platform.
And Policastro says that's good news, because it means a subway system could slow chemicals or bacteria from spreading simply by stopping all the trains. Of course, that means somebody has to realize that terrorists have just released something dangerous. And the Army's study in the 1960s suggested something curious. The mock terrorists were able to contaminate New York subways, partly because most people ignored them. The Army agents described what happened in an unclassified report. They said there they were, standing on the subway platforms and in the train cars, surrounded by throngs of riders. The agents were operating strange machinery. Some were spreading visible clouds of bacteria, and nobody tried to stop them. When the cloud engulfed people, one agent wrote, they brushed their clothing and walked on. So government scientists are inventing sensors that detect terrorist attacks automatically. They've made so much progress in the past few years that they're already testing them in the subways in Washington, D.C. Subway officials put out a press release to announce this testing program, although they won't let reporters see the devices. They cite security reasons. But Paige Stoutland says the sensors can detect chemical attacks, like the one in Tokyo.
The way chemical detectors work is that they suck in a small amount of air. They sort of sniff the air, if you will. And then using analytical techniques, they're able to tell whether it's nerve gas or something innocuous. And then they simply sound an alarm.
Stoutland is being modest. Until now, the only way you could monitor a subway was to send a technician to take air samples and then analyze them in a sophisticated laboratory. The whole process could take days. But scientists in the subway program have invented miniature labs that are barely bigger than a breadbox, and they've replaced the human technicians with tiny computers. Stoutland says if you could peer into one kind of detector with a microscope, you'd see long chains of molecules that are shaking. When the machine sucks in air from the subway, different chemicals in the air get stuck to the molecule's surface.
You can think about the surface as sort of a vibrating surface. It's vibrating at a very high frequency. And when something binds to it, it perturbs that frequency a little bit. And it perturbs it in a way that's related to the mass of the gas.
And then the computer says, aha, since the molecules are vibrating at this new speed now, there must be some sarin nerve gas stuck to them, or mustard gas or whatever. And then it sends an alarm to the subway command center. Danger, we've just been attacked. Send the rescue crews to contain it. Studies suggest that every minute they can shave off the time that it takes to respond could save hundreds of lives. Stoutland says the test devices are working so well that subways might start buying them over the next year. The drawback is these detectors can only spot dangerous chemicals. Stoutland says they need a few more years to perfect sensors that analyze biological weapons, like the germs that cause anthrax or smallpox. They have a prototype, but it's not accurate enough and it's too big.
And the challenge in the coming years is to take it from sort of the file cabinet size that it presently is down to something that's far smaller.
So when you go to sleep at night, are you tossing and turning because you're not there yet? And subways are a vulnerable part of our country.
I don't lie awake at night worrying about the threat. I lie awake at night occasionally thinking about what I can do to get us to where we need to go faster. We know which direction we need to go in. I just wish we could get there sooner.
And the subways will get better protected sooner or later, depending on how much money they can get. Officials who run the system in Washington, D.C. figure they need around $100 million just to install chemical sensors. So far, they're not sure where they'll get the money. In the meantime, all this subway research might make life easier for you next time you go to the doctor. A group of scientists from the Subway Project have quit the government, and they've set up a new company with the government's blessings. They're going to take those chemical warfare sensors and modify them, so your doctor could analyze your blood samples right then and there during your checkup. I'm Daniel Zwirdling for NPR News and American Radio Works.
American Radio Works is the documentary project of Minnesota Public Radio and NPR News.